Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Hardwood Paroxysm. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. And we're back with another season preview podcast today. And today's podcast, we're going to be covering the Brooklyn Nets. And to talk all things Brooklyn Nets, I'm joined by Ronald Agers of True Hoop Network on ESPN.com. Ronald, how are you going?
How you doing, Josh?
I'm very good. It's good to have you on the program. We're going to talk some Brooklyn Nets, a team that you cover, you write for True Hoop. What do you think of their offseason? They, by all measurables, they got worse. Do you think that there is any chance that they stay the same? Do they get better by subtraction? How did you view their offseason so far?
Most people, if you think about it, they think that the Brooklyn Nets are going to be worse, as you said. However, I think they may get better, and I'm going to tell you why. Going into the offseason, Billy King had a mission. He had to get them out of luxury tax territory. Yep. We all understand that Brooklyn had a win now personality, and when they did that, obviously they let some things slide. Darren Williams obviously did not pan out. Joe Johnson is getting a little bit older. Brooke Lopez had injury problems, and they've also had coaching issues. So at the time, they realized that at 38-44, backing into the playoffs, they knew that, hey, we're not going to win a title this year. We're paying hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars in luxury tax fees over the last couple of years. So getting rid of Darren Williams and getting more of a idea of a defensive mentality under Lionel Hollins, I think they've done a better job, more of an addition by subtraction.
Okay. Look, from all reports, Darren Williams was a real issue in terms of clashing with players, in particular with lots of stories of him and Lionel Hollins and him and Joe Johnson having real issues. And chemistry is something that can't be underrated with teams. Getting someone out that a lot of the players don't like, which it appears Williams was that sort of guy, may encourage these other guys to play with more energy, more vitality, and actually produce better on the court. It's not like Jarrett Jack. I'm not a fan of Jarrett Jack at all. I don't think he's a great player, but putting him in there in place of Darren, when the other players might actually respect him a little bit more, that might help improve their games. In terms of the guys that they added this offseason, they added a few guys. I'm not sure many of them are going to have much of an impact. Andrea Bargnani, Wayne Ellington, Donald Sloan, Quincy Miller, Thomas Robinson, and Shane Larkin. Out of that group of guys who came across and joined the team, excluding the draft choices, who do you like out of this group? Who do you think is potentially going to have the biggest impact?
Truth be told, probably none of them. But the one guy honestly, I'm rooting for to have a good season is Thomas Robinson. Because you remember, he was a lottery pick, picked fourth out of Kansas, but he never really panned out. But with Thomas Robinson, Lionel Hollins wants a defensive mentality. I mean, you remember he built up the Memphis Grizzlies in his image. And they're still playing with Z-Bo, Mark Gasol, those guys, Tony Allen, a defensive mentality. What Lionel Hollins is trying to do is tear down this pretty boy type of basketball that they were playing the last few years, starting on the defensive end. Thomas Robinson is not a guy that's you can call plays for, but he's going to play hard every night, probably 20 minutes a game. He'll defend on the post. He'll rebound. He'll be that hard worker that they really need. Also, they recently signed Dante Jones to a non-guaranteed contract. So you can see right now, Dante Jones is kind of that Tony Allen type of player, the kind of player that's going to be bring his lunch pail to work and defend. So on the defensive, on the offensive side of the ball, the Brooklyn Nets are going to be really ugly to watch. But the foundation that they're trying to lay right now is we're trying to get first under the salary cap and get cheaper so they don't have to spend as much on their salaries. That's why they got rid of Darren Williams in the first place. And we're trying to build on the defensive end because they're going to build it in Lionel Hollins' image.
You're right about Robinson. He's had a few different stops. Sacramento, obviously Houston, Portland, Philadelphia last season. His per 36 numbers are really good. He's just never been able to lock down a big role. For last season, per 36 minutes, he averaged 14 points and 13.5 boards with a block and 1.5 steals. And those numbers are really good. Now, he's not going to get in a position barring injury, where he's going to play 30 to 35 minutes in Brooklyn. He's going to be behind Brook Lopez. He's going to be behind Thaddeus Young. But those guys, both of those guys, are not the most durable players, especially Lopez, even though he had a really strong second half. Robinson has an opportunity to come in here if there is an injury and go in there and be especially a big rebounding guy, a big defensive guy, steals, blocks, boards. If that situation arises where you see an injury happen to Young or to Lopez, Robinson's probably going to go in there. He's not going to play 36 minutes, but he'll be a 28, 29 minute sort of guy. And you can almost write him down for 10 rebounds every night, a block, a steal, those sort of things. And that can be really useful for fantasy. There's no real point in drafting him, but he's always someone you've got to keep an eye on. Deeper leagues, yes, if you're talking a 20-team league, then Thomas Robinson comes into consideration, but he's more a considerational player if you have injuries. I think the same goes for Andrea Bargnani, who'll fill that Brook Lopez role if something happens to Lopez. We know that he's horrible defensively, but he can score, and this team is going to be limited, especially if Lopez goes down. I just don't know who would score if Lopez goes down, especially in the front court.
Yeah, and also, and another thing with Thomas, Andre Bargnani is going to be an enigma. It's going to be one of two things. Either it's going to work out very well for the Brooklyn Nets, or it's going to be an embarrassment for the Brooklyn Nets. Andrea Bargnani is not – he has been basically a bust since he's been in the league. He's basically been a soft – basically the stereotype for European players, with them being soft and not wanting to work hard and going to the paint and wanting to bang. He's the poster child for that. So the reason why – I mean, really, to be totally honest, when you saw him in Toronto and when you saw him with the Knicks, which Phil Jackson called him a tease, saying that he did not want to work hard in the playoffs. I mean, in practice and whatnot, and it affected the whole team. Sometimes Phil Jackson does say things just to nag at you a little bit. The same thing with Shane Larkin, who the Nets picked up. But he's just right. He's just a guy that stands at the top of the key at 3-point line and just shoots jumpers. He doesn't play hard. So, like you said, with Brook Lopez, we've never seen him really stay healthy through an 82-game season. You're right; he can't guard a Coke machine, and he's been known as being soft. And Lionel Hollins has kind of called him out on that, because you got to remember he was on the bench for 28 games last year.
Yeah, that was ridiculous in my opinion, though.
Yeah, him and Lionel Hollins didn't get along very well last year.
That's exactly right.
So if it's going to be very important for those two to get on the same page, because Lionel Hollins is a no-nonsense guy. But I feel if Brook Lopez does listen to him, and this is key, if he listens to him and buys into his philosophy, Brook Lopez could be an all-star this year. Remember, back in Memphis, Lionel Hollins had the same problem with Mark Gasol. He was sitting him down. Defending, he wasn't a strong defender. He wasn't rebounding up to his capabilities. And Hollins challenged him. Gasol took the challenge, and now he's one of the top centers in the NBA. It's going to be very interesting to see Lopez does the same.
I think that you're spot on with Lopez. There was definite friction between those two early last season when, to me, he was inexplicably benched for Mason Plumlee. But there was obviously reasons behind it. But he came back, and he was awesome. He was a top 15 player for the last 2 months of the season in fantasy leagues. He actually improved his rebounding numbers. In the last 2 months of the year, he averaged 9.2 rebounds a game. The previous 2 years, he'd been at 6 and 6.9, and that was always the knock on Brook Lopez. Yeah, he will score. He's one of the best offensive centers in the game, but he's never rebounding. And he got in there, and that's an improvement of 3 rebounds a game, which is huge. He's always been a pretty good blocks guy. That doesn't always correlate to being a good defender, but he's a good guy for getting blocks. He's an awesome percentage player. And I think that they did start to get on the same page at the end of last season. Shane Larkin, you mentioned, he came across, and I've heard talk of people thinking, you know what, at some point this season, Shane Larkin's going to take over the starting point guard job from Jarrett Jack. I don't really see it. I'm okay with Shane Larkin. I think he's a decent player. He's quite a good defender. But he had a chance in New York last season for the Knicks to establish himself as a starting point guard when Jose Calderon was down. It didn't happen. Is there anything to make you think that, yeah, he is going to challenge Jarrett Jack for this job?
Man, no. Are you kidding? People say that they don't know what you're talking about. Listen, Shane Larkin got hot in his last year in Miami. They had that run in the NCAA tournament. He came in, Barry Larkin's son, the all-star from Cincinnati, Hall of Famer. There's a reason why Shay Larkin didn't pan out in Dallas. There's a reason why he did not pan out in New York. One, he's a small point guard that wants to be a scoring two guard. He's going to have to find a way to run an offense, and he's definitely going to have to run an offense in Lionel Hollins' philosophy. He does not shoot well enough from the outside. Plus, he has trouble getting his shot off. Granted, in New York. Honest, Earl Pearl Moreau or Walt Frazier couldn't get a shot off in New York last year. They were just a bad team. They got caught. He got caught. Been caught in a bad situation. But he's now jumped out from the firing pan into the fire with the Brooklyn Nets, because, like you said, but like we've already established, Brook Lopez, if healthy, he can score. But where else is it going to come from? Joe Johnson, aka ISO Joe. He can get his shots off, but you know he basically pounds the ball into the floor for 15 seconds before he gets a shot off. So within the offense that the way it's structured, I don't see Shane Larkin doing very well in this offense, and he cannot defend. At least Jared Jack to an extent, and I agree with you because you said you weren't particularly fond of Jared Jack. I'm not either. He's a great play. He played great in Golden State with Martin a few years back. Parlayed it into a contract with Cleveland, and then since then he's been a journeyman ever since. So he had a hot year in Golden State, where the offense suited him, and with a free flowing offense. So is Jared Jack gonna lose his starting spot to Shane Larkin? No, it'll never happen.
No, I'm glad you said that, because I can't see that happening. I'm not a fan of Jack, but he is a lot better than what Shane Larkin is. And from a fantasy point of view, Jared Jack's going to put up some pretty good numbers. I think he's going to get minutes, because they're not going to invest in Shane Larkin. Donald Sloan's the other point guard. Ryan Boatwright. These are not guys who they think they're going to be future starters, future all-stars or anything like that. Jack will keep the ship running steadily.
These are just cheap. They're all just cheap. They're just filling spots right now. In other words, right now, Billy King has the filler squad and keep them under the luxury tax. And that's it. That's it. That was his charge. That's it. They're not going to be a winning team per se. And Jared Jack, he's going to put up some numbers, because Jared Jack looks for his numbers. So that's a flat guarantee if you're looking fantasy-wise. Jared Jack going to get his numbers.
Absolutely. Like, if you look at what he did last season when he was a starter in that time when Darren Williams was injured or when Lionel Hollins was benching him, he averaged 15.9 points, almost 4 rebounds, and 6.5 assists. That's really useful. He doesn't shoot threes. He hit less than 1 3 a game. He got just about a steal a game. But the other numbers are going to be really good. So for a late round point guard, you know that he's going to be pretty much guaranteed minutes, and he's going to score, and he's going to put up numbers. Doesn't mean he's a good player, but he's going to put up numbers for a fantasy point of view, definitely. The guys that left Brooklyn, Alan Anderson, Darren Williams, we've talked about already, Mirza Teletovic headed across to Phoenix, and Mason Plumlee to Portland in that trade that netted the Brooklyn Nets Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Who's the biggest loss out of those guys?
Mason Plumlee. Mason Plumlee is going to be the biggest loss. Here's why. I mean, on the defensive end, because he bought into what Lionel Hollins philosophy was. He was getting better as a defender because he played with the U.S. national team. He was getting better as a player. There's an upside to him. You knew he was going to defend. But the biggest thing, honestly, Darren Williams leaving was basically the number one thing. That's basically the off season for the Brooklyn Nets, because they needed him. They needed him out of the locker room. Joe Johnson was ready to kill him after game 6 of last season. Rumor had it from the New York Daily News that when Lionel Hollins and Darren Williams had their little air their grievances out meeting and whatnot, they had to be physically restrained. So with Darren Williams leaving, it basically changed the culture of this is what we're going to do. And also it sent a message to the rest of the team. You either gonna get in line. You're gonna either get down or lay down or just get out of town.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. That we touched on that already, that the loss of Williams isn't it's an addition by subtraction because of the way that everybody else responded to him. And from all reports, Williams just appears to be just not a good person, not a good person to get along with everywhere he's been. The reports coming out of Utah about what he was like there and wouldn't, you know, refuse to listen to any sort of coaching. He's got another chance in Dallas. Who knows? I'll cover that more when I look at the Mavericks, but he's been a real pain in the ass basically everywhere he's been. Let's talk young players for the Nets and guys who've been drafted in the last couple of seasons. They've actually started to accumulate some players, not necessarily high draft picks, because we know that they mortgage a lot of their draft choices and they've been sitting in that sort of purgatory zone in the NBA where you're, you know, getting the last seed in the playoffs and never a high draft pick. But they've got a couple of guys here. They brought in Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Chris McCullough this year as first-round draft picks. Juan Voile as a second-round pick, and Markel Brown, who started a significant amount of games last season as a second-round pick. Out of all of these players, Hollis Jefferson, Brown, McCullough, and Voile, who I don't think we're going to see this season, who do you think has the brightest future on this team? Is it clearly Hollis Jefferson?
Hollis Jefferson, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure yet. I wrote an article on Brooklyn's Finest about Billy King, the GM, why he's still the GM based on all the mistakes that he has made. I like Markel Brown better than all the rest of them.
Okay.
The draft that I'm not sold on Rondae Hollis yet. I'm just not sold on him and everything. He looks like a slender guy. He doesn't fit the mold that Lionel Hollis, because he likes tough guys. He likes tough guys that defend and whatnot. I'm not sure about his jumper yet and playing big minutes. Because on this team, everybody's gonna have a chance to play. The talent pool is not big. It's not a lot right now. Chris McCullough. Let me see here. Let me pull something up right here.
Chris McCullough, he's not gonna play a huge amount. He's coming back off a torn ACL. Game,
but yeah. Chris McCullough's not going to play, but they say he's a top five pick, but he blew out his ACL. It's going to be very interesting to see how he comes back from his injury. You don't want a Joel Embiid from the Sixers. We don't know how he's going to recover from it, but they say he's a lottery pick talent. They say the draft that Billy King had this year was very successful. He had a successful draft night. But with me, I like to see how people mentally, come back from these injuries, sitting out a year, being able to mentally recover from a major injury like that and play in the NBA. Because we don't know if he's good enough to play. We don't know if he's gonna pan out, and we don't even know if Brooklyn's really gonna give them the opportunity to get a chance to learn from his mistakes and hit the rookie wall and stuff that rookies go through.
I agree with pretty much all that. I don't really see a huge amount of, like, Hollis Jefferson, yeah, he's an okay perimeter defender. His offense is going to struggle significantly. I don't think he's going to have much of an impact this season. Maybe next year when Joe Johnson moves on, there's some extra minutes, but he's not really a two. He's more of a three, although Johnson's probably going to play majority of three this year anyway. I don't see a huge amount of sort of dynasty value for any of these guys. McCullough will be interesting to see whether he comes back, but again, you're talking about a big man coming off an ACL. We don't know how he's going to recover or when he's going to recover. Markel Brown started off the season in his first couple of starts putting up big numbers, but then he tailed away and was basically invisible down the stretch. There's just not a lot of, you have to be really deep in a league to look at these guys. And even in a dynasty format, I'm not putting a huge amount of stock in them ever becoming good players or great players. They'll probably just be serviceable role players at best. Now, Ronald, if we're talking about players who are breakout candidates, a player who goes, you know, might be a good player and goes to a great player, or becomes from an irrelevant player to a decent role player, or just any sort of definition that you've got for it, who's the player that you look at on this roster? You go, you know what, this guy is going to be the breakout for the Nets this year and have the biggest improvement.
Easily, Thaddeus Young.
Okay.
I think, and I got a lot of flack for this, I think Thaddeus Young got grossly overpaid. Got overpaid. He got a $50 million. I mean, he opted out of his $10 million option, and then they re-signed in 4 years at $50 million. That ought to tell you how bad the Brooklyn Nets, the squad as a whole, is right now, because they grossly overpaid him. I think they they overbid against themselves, giving them $50 million. So to justify that $50 million, you know he's going to get 40 to 45 minutes a game. You get with the young lady, probably the youngest player on the team with the upside, with Joe Johnson on the way out the door, and Brooke Lopez with iffy feet. So I think Thaddeus Young will get all the shots they want. They will run the offense through him. I'm not saying that he's not, I'm not saying that he's a bad offensive player. I mean, he's going to get you some numbers, but I don't think he's the type of player that warrants $50 million. But he's going to get the shots that a fantasy player would want. I mean, he's going to get 15 to 20 shots a night. So if he gets hot here and there, I think he's good for 17, 18, 19 points a game.
I think that's
6 or 7 rebounds here and there. I mean, he's not going to shoot well, but he'll score well. So if you're looking for fantasy value, okay, fine. That's the guy that you want. But if on this squad, and believe me, you're going to have to look hard if you're going through Brooklyn. It's going to be a hard – you're going to be better off finding a bank vault money from a bank robbery faster than finding any value on this team. You're looking for Thaddeus Young.
Thaddeus Young's last season in Philadelphia, I don't know if he's going to be able to approach those numbers, but he averaged 18 points, he hit a 3 a game, had 6 rebounds, over 2 steals, half a block, and not good percentages, but decent percentages. It's not completely crazy to think he gets close to those numbers, because you're right, who's going to take minutes away from him? There's no one there to get minutes at power forward. We spoke about, you know, Chris McCullough having the injury, and he would be the backup power forward. Thomas Robinson, but he's never shown he can, you know, play 30 minutes. He might get increased role. We touched on him earlier. He might get an increased role, but they paid the big money to Thad Young. He's there for the next 4 years. I think that he is going to get significant opportunity to play, you know, pretty big minutes. He's currently being drafted at pick 90, which I think is about right in head-to-head leagues. I think he has more value in a rotisserie league, maybe a couple of rounds earlier. But you can, and especially if you're looking for steals, he's one of the elite steals guys from a big man. Not many big men can approach 2 steals a game. It's probably him and Nerlens Noel are the only 2 guys who you'd even be looking at to get that 2 steals a game. And that's in point guard territory. That's Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, Chris Paul, Ricky Rubio level. There's not many guys who can get 2 steals a game. Thad Young is one of them. His minutes are not going to be challenged like they were in Minnesota last year, which caused a drop-off in his play. He was quite good down the stretch in Brooklyn. Now he's had a full off-season. He just got paid. He's going to be one of their, not necessarily cornerstones, but he's one of their major players. Nobody else is going to be getting those minutes. So I like that pick. The guy that I had down listed as my guy as a breakout player is Bojan Bogdanović. I'm convinced he's going to start for this team. He'll play at the 2 alongside Joe Johnson at the 3. He's obviously a European player. It's going to be his second season, but he's not a typical second-year player because he's been playing professionally overseas for quite a while. I think he's going to have a significant uptick in his minutes. He's scoring. He's going to hit threes. He's a really good shooter from deep and from the free throw line. He just needs to improve his peripheral stats. He needs to get some steals and some rebounds. He averaged less than 1 assist and less than half a steal a game last year. That needs to improve, but I think it will. I think that we're going to see 30 minutes a night from Bogdanović. I think that he's going to provide you nice 3-pointers, and he's going to be a really decent player to look at in those last couple of rounds of fantasy drafts because, again, I don't know who's taking the minutes away from him. I don't see any situation where somebody else starts over Bogdanović. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but there's a caveat with Bogdanović. Jarrett Jack is your point guard.
Yep.
Jarrett Jack is not a pure point guard. Jarrett Jack going to get his shots. Now, that's very – because Thaddeus Young and Brooke Lopez are going to be the top 2 options.
Yep.
Bogdanović is not going to be. It's not going to be one of the major options. Jarrett Jack, one of my knocks against him is he doesn't particularly know how to run an offense. He's a shoot first point guard. So if Bogdanović can easily get lost in this offense, unless Lionel Hollins says, hey, and pulls Jack to the side and says, Jarrett, we're running a play for Bogdanović. You got to get the ball to him. Look for him more often in the corner. Look for him on the wing or something to that extent, or they're speeding up the tempo in the game. Jarrett Jack, now, if the one thing about Deron Williams is, to an extent, he did pound the ball into the ground a lot, and he looked for his shot. However, if you put a gun to his head or you made him, if it was his last option, he could find Bogdanović at times. I agree with you because he is a talent and he's obviously the best shooter on that team.
By a long way.
He can knock down them shots. But if Jarrett Jack does not get him the ball in positions where he can score, that could hurt him a lot.
Now, in the last 2 weeks of last season, it's small sample size, but it's still something to keep an eye on. He played 30 minutes a game. He only averaged 24 for the season. But in those games, he got over 11 shots a game, and he was hitting his threes at 49%, averaging 2.4 threes a game. Now, that's you're probably not going to expect him to hit two threes a game for the season, but he was at 15.5 points, 2.5 threes on 54% shooting from the field. They're really good numbers. He was getting involved more in the offense, and I think they're going to be looking at him to get around 10 or 11 shots a game. Not necessarily design plays, but kickouts from Lopez if he gets a double team to an open Bogdanović, because he is the best shooter on this team by such a large margin that he is going to be that go-to guy. If we need a three, he's the guy they're going to have to target, because realistically, if you look at the rest of the team, nobody can really shoot threes. You know, Joe Johnson, yes, he can shoot threes, but we know his limitations. Otherwise, Jarrett Jack can't hit them. Thad Young, not really. Bagnani, but he's not going to be on the court. Shane Larkin can't shoot. Hollis Jefferson can't shoot. You got Wayne Ellington, but what sort of role he's going to play? There's nobody. It's Bogdanović, and that's about it. And that's going to be one of the issues with this team as a whole. They just don't have shooting.
And also, Josh, understand something else too. This team has less talent than last year. In other words, he's higher up on the scouting report. The higher you get up on the scouting report, they're saying, "Hey, look here, we're gonna pay a little bit more." They got a chance. They're afforded to have more attention to Bogdanović than he did last year. And also throw in this, and you got to throw this in too. They were going in the last couple of months of the season. Lionel Hollins was close to getting fired. With all this stuff going on with the ownership thinking about selling the team, there was a whole lot of things going on at that time, and everybody at that time had a sense of urgency, if you will. Jarrett Jack, you know as well as I do, Gary, watching the NBA, Jarrett Jack has a shelf life. Look, 6 months to a year, Jarrett Jack can play out of his mind. You've been thinking he's a Hall of Fame player. And then when he starts believing and he starts to get comfortable, because you know who's going to take Jarrett Jack's spot.
Yeah.
With Darren Williams gone, because, I mean, it's easy for Jack to play well last year because everybody – he was the lesser of two evils in a sense, because everybody hated Darren Williams at that time. They were ready for him to go anyway. So you knew Jarrett Jack could come in, do well, play nice and everything. Now that Jarrett Jack is the only point guard there, and you got Shane Larkin, Donald Sloan, a guy from Indiana Pacers that probably half the people in the NBA didn't even know got signed to the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, these are bargain basement players. Jared Jack's going to get 35 to 40 minutes regardless. So it's going to be interesting to see will he get him the ball and run the offense so Bogdanović can be effective? And two, when teams start paying more attention to him.
I agree with all that. That is, look, he's going to have to, he will improve his game, but he's going to have to improve it past the level of attention that gets thrown his way. When we look at guys who are going to be fantasy sleepers, I think that Jarrett Jack is the name that really stands out. He's got an average draft position of 114. I think he's clearly a top 100 guy just because the minutes are going to be big and he's going to have the opportunity to put up numbers, and there's no one really competing for that. So if you're picking him inside the top 100, that's absolutely fine. I've got him ranked at about 90 in head-to-head leagues, 80 in Roto. 114 is a real steal. We're talking a 30-spot increase there in some sort of formats. I think that's a fantastic value pick. To pick him at that spot. And a few of the Nets are underrated. Brook Lopez is a little bit underrated as well with his draft position of 35. But I do understand him dropping a bit. It's because of the injury concerns. Because when he plays, we're talking top 15 talent. And as you mentioned earlier, a huge chance of being an all-star. Because he is, you know, one of the top two best offensive centers in the game. Him or DeMarcus Cousins. His offensive game is fantastic. He improved his rebounding. His blocks were right up there. But he's got to stay healthy, and fingers crossed for Brook and for the Nets that happens, because I think that he's going to be a top 20 fantasy guy if he keeps himself healthy.
This is how good, actually, Josh, this is how good Brook Lopez is.
Yep.
In the playoffs last year, I did an interview on a radio show, and they were against the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks had nothing for him. This was the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They were the story of the NBA. And Brook Lopez destroyed the front line of the Atlanta Hawks. The Brooklyn Nets exposed them, because everybody thought, hey, they could be they're going to get swept out of Brooklyn back into the playoffs. They'll be swept by the Atlanta Hawks. I actually thought they were going to go six games. Yeah. And to be totally honest with you, if Darren Williams catches a clue and realizes get the ball down in the post low to Brook Lopez, Brooklyn could have won that series because they had no – I think he was shooting 70, 80% from the field.
I've got the numbers.
Not the line, I'm talking about from the field.
He was –
so he actually – he is one of the most polished offensive centers in the league, period, point blank, and nobody in the Eastern Conference can deal with him.
No, that's exactly
if he
right.
stays healthy. He can win 30 games by himself. If they run the offense through him and everything, nobody's going to be able to stop this guy. But again, it's going to depend on the point guards getting him the ball so he can be effective.
He's clearly the best player on this team. Last year, he only played 29 minutes a game. That is sure to increase because there was that stretch where they ran him off the bench for big chunks of the season when Mason Plumlee was the starter. That was not a good idea, in my opinion. But he came back on. He came back strong. And not even strong. He came back fantastically strong. And he's clearly the best player on this team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, I want to look at people who are sort of overvalued in terms of their fantasy production. Joe Johnson's getting drafted at pick 97 at the moment. And that, to me, is too high. I've got him as sort of a last-round pick in a head-to-head league, about 140. He's a bit better in a roto league, but if you're taking Joe Johnson inside the top 100, I think that you're wasting that top 100 pick. His play has declined steadily over the last few seasons. I imagine it declines again. I just don't see much positive from Joe Johnson. Yeah, he's been a good player. He's been a real solid guy. Forget the contract because we know that that's bloated and it's not a true reflection of his value. He's been a really good player though. But I think that the time is coming to an end. We might see a trade from Joe Johnson or him get traded to another team this year. I think that wasting a top 100 pick on him is not the stuff that fantasy winners are made of. How do you see Johnson? Do you think he remains on this team through the end of the season?
Yes, I think he will stick through because, again, it's about finances right now. I think it's all right now. The ownership group only cares about the bottom line, what they're going to pay. $24 million comes off the books at the end of the year. So, I mean, that financially, if they're going to, that's all they're looking at. They're not looking at anything. They're not looking at the stats on the floor. They're not looking at the rebounds. They're looking at $24 million.
Yep.
Let's be clear on that. But I would like to see him get traded. I'm a Joe Johnson fan. Joe Johnson, my favorite player on the team. They call him Joe Cool. I mean, all the purists that always criticize him call him ISO Joe, which I don't like. But he's the only one on that team that can get his own shot. He's the only one that in crunch time, you can go to him for a game winning shot. So I've always liked Joe Johnson. Anybody that's willing to take the big shot and make the big shot, I'll always be a fan of. And I hope he gets traded to a contender like, let's say Miami or somebody that can take him off the bench and whatnot and get him a ring or get him in a winning situation. I don't think he will be traded. Here's the reason why. You have to have players that's going to line up to that huge contract. Yeah. The numbers have got to line up. If they trade Joe Johnson out of town, they're going to be taking back bad contracts because his contract is huge. It's pretty much untradeable. So if they do trade him, it's going to be somebody that got their chips all pushed in and they don't care about the luxury tax down the line, which I don't see happening because when Golden State, who just won a world title, is cutting back on their finances, making trading David Lee out of town, I don't know many teams is willing to take on a contract that huge. Maybe Cleveland, but what does Cleveland have that Brooklyn's willing to take back? So they're not going to take back bad contracts at this moment in time. Billy King is not going to do that if he wants to keep his job.
I agree with you completely. I wrote something about that for the Hardwood Paroxysm season preview. I don't think that he is getting traded because what's coming back? And plus, normally in the NBA or these days, to unload a big contract like that, you have to give up assets as well. They'd have to give up draft picks, and they just don't have draft picks to squander, to give away, like, you know, to do salary. Yeah, they
can't even sell draft picks.
That's right, they can't.
Because they mortgaged all of their draft picks away for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. So, I mean, let's just say Boston basically is playing, let's make a deal at Brooklyn, at the Brooklyn Nets' expense right now with all the draft picks that they gave away. Yep. So they are really, Brooklyn Nets are really hamstrung. Basically, Joe Johnson's their biggest asset with him, with his contract coming off the books in the offseason next year.
Yeah, that's definitely true that that's going to clear them a ton of space. Now, when we look at this team, Rondo, we have a look at guys who are limited by their playing time. So I want to look, is there a guy on this team who you think that if for some reason they're to get starters minutes and play 30 to 35 minutes a game, who's a player that is in that situation that would excel and start putting up really good stats that fantasy owners would want to take notice of? There's not much. I agree.
I hope your fantasy people do not kill me, because I mean, this is kind of going with the heart per se. Wayne Ellington.
Okay.
I know Wayne. I listen here. I know Wayne Ellington has not done well per se in the NBA, but there is something that man has that a lot of people in the NBA don't have. He has a consistent jump shot.
Yep.
If he can get his shot, listen, he has a ton of trouble getting it off. Now, you got to run him off four or five picks to do it. But if the system works for him, and Lonnie Hollins put something together that he can come off the bench, because they're going to need somebody to score off the bench. Yeah, they're going to need a scoring guard off the bench. So, and looking at this list there, it's a hard way, because you notice I looked down, because you got to look hard, long and hard. But Wayne Ellington is the only one, I mean, outside of Joe Johnson, Bogdanovich, we've already talked about, that has a legitimate jump shot. So if you're pushing and you looking at somebody that's diamond in the rough, Wayne Ellington is that guy. I mean, 15 to 18 foot jump, you give him some time, he's going to knock that shot down.
He's never been a guy that's excelled anywhere, but his per 36 numbers look good. His 3-point percentages look good. You know, he shot 37% from three last year. It was 42 the year before, 39 the year before that. That's consistently good numbers. We look at what he did per 36 last year: 14 points, 2 threes, 4.5 rebounds, even 2.5 assists, half a steal. They're good numbers. And this is a situation where we're talking about if someone is pressed into big minutes, can they produce? And he can produce enough that he becomes relevant. He's never going to be a star or an all-star, but he can give you those 2 threes a game. He can give you some solid scoring as well.
And understand, he did this for the Lakers. Yep. And the Lakers are worse than the Brooklyn Nets. So if he can put up them per 36 for the Lakers with no Kobe Bryant and all this, that, and the third, he can do something with the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, you know, the talent in the Western Conference is ridiculous. So if he can do that in the Western Conference, he can be serviceable for the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, I think he can do something.
He's not a guy that I really considered in that sort of situation, but you're right that if he looks, somebody's going to have to take on a bigger role if there isn't an injury, and he could be the guy. The guy that I look to this would be terrible for the Brooklyn Nets if he's pushed into big minutes, but it would actually work out well for fantasy, and that's Bagnani, who we talked about before. When he was put in as a starter for the Knicks last season, he put up great fantasy numbers. He was a must-own fantasy player down the stretch. He is not a good basketball player. I'm going to stress that again. He's not good, but he can go out there, and he can put up numbers. The last 2 months of last season, he averaged 16 points a game. He was hitting a half a three. He shoots really good percentages, especially for a big man, 83% from the free throw line. But he is a good scorer. He only averaged 4.6 rebounds, which is horrific for a man that is 7 foot tall. It is brutal, and he is not a good player. But if he isn't pushed into a situation where they have to give him 30 minutes because of an injury to Lopez, and they go, we need a center to go out there and do something or some offensive boosts, he is going to be worth owning for that period of time, because he can score, because his game is sort of fantasy friendly. He can hit you half a 3-pointer a game as a big man. It's going to be disgusting for the Nets. They're going to lose even more games if he's pushed into a bigger role. But for fantasy, if he goes out there, you know that Andrea Bagnani is going to score and he's going to put up numbers. We saw it with the Knicks last year. As detestable as it is to go, I'm adding Andrea Bagnani to my fantasy team, if he's out there getting minutes, you pretty much have to do it, because you know that he's going to be able to put up those numbers. Just it's not going to be fun watching the Nets if that's the case.
Yeah, but and I'm gonna tell you something else, Josh. You got very, 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 very careful with that, because Lionel Hollins is no nonsense, and it's his way. It's his way of the highway. If Bagnani, and we know that man is not going to defend anybody, we could score on Andre Bargnani. If you don't defend, you're not going to see the floor. That's the key I'm trying to tell everybody. He's not going to see the floor. Now, can he get? Listen, top of the key. You give him 3 weeks to shoot. You know, he's gonna knock it down. That's no, then he's gonna score it. And understand with the Knicks, they gave him time on the floor to produce. It wasn't because he was playing well. It was because they were trying to trade him. They were trying to get him out of town as fast as possible. It's just the fact that nobody would take him. Would take him in a trade in any way, form, or fashion. Phil Jackson was just trying to get rid of him. So with that, I would be careful with that pick. If that's what I'm trying to say.
I don't think you should be picking Andrea Bargnani in any sort of fantasy league. It's more that if you see that they have to play him minutes and they are playing him minutes, then it's value. There's no reason to draft him in any sort of league. His current draft position is 137, which is ludicrous to me. Now, I know it's only, and someone mentioned this to me on Twitter the other day, that with those last average draft positions, he's only owned in like 3 or 4% of leagues. So it's people who have got no idea and they're drafting him, and that bumps his draft position up. But if you're sitting in a draft and you're looking at the people, oh, where has everyone been taking them? And you get to that position. I mentioned this with Vince Carter yesterday, who was at pick 130-something. If you're down at the end and you say, oh, you know, Vince Carter's going to pick 130, it doesn't tell you that he's only going to pick 130 in 2% of leagues. Bargnani's the same situation. Don't draft him. It's not worth anyone's hassle. There is no reason to draft Andrea Bargnani in any fantasy leagues unless by the time that I'm mentioning this, something horrific happens to Brook Lopez and that he's the only option. But let's hope that that's not the case.
Yeah.
I think we've covered pretty much everybody on this team, Ronald. I think we've talked about everyone. Let's get to the last part of the show. You mentioned it before. Your favorite player on this team is Joe Johnson. Who's your favorite all-time player for this team?
Actually, there's two. One was Kenny Anderson. I love Kenny Anderson, Archibald Bishop High School in New York. The way he handled that basketball, it was just a wonderful thing to watch, to see him watch from Georgia Tech, and basically throughout his career. I still enjoy watching him play on YouTube. He was a real good player. I really liked him. My all-time favorite is the late Drazen Petrovic.
Ah, yes.
I love shooters. And the man shot before he passed. I mean, this is the year before he passed. He shot 51% from the three-point line. I want you to think for the season. Think about it. So in other words, when he raised his arm behind the arc, more than half of the time, the ball went into the basket from 27 feet out. Do you know how ridiculous that is? This dude could play. He was the Nets pretty much went into the tank for years after he passed. They had something really special going on in New Jersey at the time when he was alive. Derek Coleman and Kenny Anderson was coming into his own. He was an all-star that year. But my all-time favorite, I even have his throwback jersey.
That's awesome.
Drazen Petrovic. I have it based on that. I have a jersey collection, and I do it based on players that I like. I mean, people be saying, well, you always tell us each other. We don't know who you like. I'm a Knicks fan. I write for the Brooklyn Nets, but I always loved Drazen Petrovic. They never gave him a real chance in Portland, but he had no, I mean, where was he going to play? He was playing behind so many all-stars. It was ridiculous. He was never. But when he came to New Jersey, he out and out smoked people. Yep. On the basketball court. When he raised his hands up, it's like you can call timeout, give him his points, and then take the ball out. So I really love Drazen Petrovic, but I've always been a Kenny Anderson fan. So those two players are really the guys that I like.
I had Petrovic,
personally.
I had Petrovic down as my guy as well. He averaged over 20 points in his two seasons for the Nets. His conversion was fantastic. He was, he wasn't a horrible defender. He gets some steals as well. He was great, and obviously it's a massive tragedy that he was gone so early. The other guy I had down as my guy favorite all time, you mentioned him just then as well, and that's Derek Coleman. He had three straight 20-10 seasons. He was 18-10 as a rookie, which is not easy to do, and then back that up with 19.8 and 9.5, and then three 20-10 seasons. So he was fantastic. He was the number one overall pick, so you expect him to be good, but he was good. Once he left New Jersey, though, things dropped off a bit for him. Wasn't quite the same player, but those early days of him playing there with Petrovic, with Kenny Anderson, they were a pretty fun team, and he put up some really good some really good numbers. And I think he's probably a little bit underrated when you look back and think about him. You think, oh, maybe he didn't quite live up to it, but he started off his career, you know, really red hot, and he was a very fun guy to watch.
Yeah, well, Derek Coleman, and listen, I like Derek Coleman too, out of Syracuse, but he had an attitude problem. That's what got him run out of New Jersey. Yeah. I mean, he had so much God-given talent. I mean, he did all that. He scored those stats that you just told everybody. That was all pure talent. That's how good he was. Think about how he could have been 20. That could have been 25 points, 26, 27 points if he would have worked hard. If he had a work ethic over Kevin Garnett or Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, whoever. These guys that worked on their games in the offseason. He did his stuff based off of talent. When you're on Sports Illustrated as a whiner and you're on the cover, that ought to tell you something. And on top of that, he never played a full season. I mean, at the beginning to the end, he just played 40, 50 some odd games with phantom injuries, allegedly. He was one of those guys that he got his big contract and then he pretty much stopped working.
Yep.
And that pretty much followed him around the league, and that's why he turned into a journeyman, pretty much for the rest of his career. I mean, this will sum it up for you. The phrase "whoopty damn do," when Butch Beard said, "Okay, we're gonna let you be the captain of the New Jersey Nets this year," it wasn't thank you, man. I'm honored. I'll do what I can. We'll come together and make this team better. No, that his phrase was. Whoop the damn do.
Yeah,
that's all I got to say about Derek Coleman and his tenure with the New Jersey Nets.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you need to hear about him. That sums it up. Great talent, just a terrible, terrible attitude. And you know, in the end, it cost him. It cost him. You know, he had a decent career. He played until he was 37 years old, so he was in the league for a long time. But he was never able to live up to what he was an all-star just once. He should have been an all-star a lot more times than that. He's still fun to watch, but it's a frustrating thing to watch him, I guess, and know what he was capable of doing, but was never able to do. Yes. Well, I think we're done, Ronald. That was great. Thank you for coming on. Remind everybody where they can find your work.
Okay. On, brooklynsfinestblog.com. That's on True Hoop Network at ESPN.com.
Go ahead and check out Ronald's stuff over on True Hoop, and there's lots of other good stuff on True Hoop as well. But check out Ronald's stuff on Brooklyn's Finest. Thanks for coming on. It was good to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, man. I hope to do it again real soon.
No problem. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall and check out stuff at Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysm. You know all the great stuff that's going on over there. And leave a review for this podcast on iTunes to really help it jump up in the rankings. If you are listening for the first couple of times and you like what you hear, go ahead and leave a review. It's always greatly appreciated, and it helps when I'm talking with sponsors to show that people actually like what's happening and get it out there and help to support the program and keep it on the air. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.